Hello, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory. Thank you for tuning into today's episode of Intersection, CITR's biweekly radio show about gender empowerment, feminism, and bringing down the patriarchy. All of which are a day's work for the small but powerful team here at CITR. We air every other Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m., so make sure you tune in then for some woke conversations and content. So today's show is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be an hour of me essentially begging you to donate to CITR's annual fund drive because we need the money so we can continue creating awesome content as we usually do for you. But before that, we have Katie and Samrith with us today. They're from UBC's Young Women in Business, and they're here to talk about this event that they have planned for International Women's Day. Guys, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So what's this event?
So basically this is an International Women's Day gala. And so International Women's Day celebrates the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women throughout time that have brought us here today. And so basically our banquet hosts 200 student and professional attendees to connect, inspire, and empower women from a range of professional backgrounds. Mm-hmm. This year our theme is collaboration over competition because we believe that when women work together, we can see better results and see great things happen.
Very cool. Katie, do you have something to say?
No, it's just we're all really excited about this event. We've been planning it since last summer, so it's definitely going to be big. It's going to be held at the Vancouver Art Gallery. We have a lot of amazing female speakers. And, yeah, it's a great event.
What's the dress code going to be for our listeners who may want to attend this event?
So the dress code is semi-formal, or I guess kind of businessy semi-formal. So you can come in like cocktail dresses or a jumpsuit or maybe a power suit. Go a little Hillary Clinton. definitely anything that you kind of want to wear or feel empowered to wear, mm-hmm. Because the whole event is kind of, not really too specific, but it's kind of about women empowerment and mm-hmm. just making everyone feel good.
Cool. And you guys do this every year, right?
Yeah, so we actually started this event last year, mm-hmm. and we held it at the Telus Gardens, and it was just so successful that we decided to do it again this year,
Very cool.
It's sort of becoming a tradition for us, so hopefully it'll keep going for a while.
Very nice. So both of you are part of this this organization at UBC, and to be honest, I'm not actually completely familiar with what Young Women in Business, what you guys do, so can you kind of enlighten me a little bit about that?
For sure. So basically, Young Women in Business is an organization that strives for female empowerment. And basically, our main goal is to connect students with young professionals and basically provide tools to be successful in kind of daily life and the workplace and to kind of gain those skills that you need in everyday life. And we also provide a network of strong females where you're working together to support each other and collaborate on projects.
Yeah, and just adding on to that, we have sort of three streams within YWIP. So the first one's just our general events. All of our members are welcome to attend. So things like our launch party and the International Women's Day event coming up. And we also have a philanthropy program, which I lead, called the YWIP Roots Program. So we have a really dedicated group of volunteers who are YWIP members, and we do lots of great initiatives around the community, such as like cleaning the streets together, putting together packages for homeless women. Mm-hmm. And we also have a Blossom mentorship program mm-hmm. where a select group of students are paired up with female professionals in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and then they work together as a mentor and mentee throughout the year. So lots of great opportunities to get involved.
Very cool. Are either of you like a mentee or a mentor for anyone right now?
Well, I was actually a mentee in first year, and that's how I got started with YWIB, and it was just such a great experience that it inspired me to continue with the club.
Very cool.
I myself am not a mentee or mentor. I didn't realize being a part of the club, I could also be a part of the program. But I definitely think just from hearing other people talk, it's definitely a great experience, and I've been able to kind of have mentors through YWIB since we have so many connections to other industry professionals.
Very cool. So Danielle and Carol are actually sitting with us right now, and very surprisingly, they've been incredibly quiet. Do you guys have any questions? Especially you, Carol.
Oh, I love being put on the spot. I guess, so our collective is gender empowerment, as you know. So my question is, how does intersectional feminism look, or what does it look like in your organization?
Well, I think the first thing, great question, first of all. I think intersectional feminism is so important. And then within our team, even if you look at our team, it's very, very diverse. We have women from all different backgrounds, different faculties, so we're always trying to be very inclusive, and we're consistently trying to do more, like considering the concerns of specifically women of color or LGBTQ folks. We're always trying to become more inclusive, and the fact that in our name it says it's called Young Women in Business, we don't actually mean to exclude any groups. So yeah, we're just trying our best to be supportive of every group that there is.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of add on with our International Women's Day, we actually have the proceeds from our silent auction going towards Big Sisters of Vancouver. And so basically that's an organization that strives to provide effective mentorship to female, transgender, and non-binary youth mm-hmm. from ages 7 to 17. Mm-hmm. So definitely we would try to work with organizations that are very inclusive mm-hmm. And that try to represent the same values we try to put up with our club as well.
Mm-hmm. And just to add, like, the fact that we're focusing on business skills, we think is super important for women to learn, because a lot of the time women have lacked economic empowerment in the past. So by learning business skills to be able to be self-sufficient, to be able to have a successful career, we think are such important tools for every woman to have.
So to follow up with that, what made you guys want to join this group? What drew you into it?
I can go for that first. Well, originally when I first came to campus, I was kind of trying to see an organization that I fit in with. And I think kind of throughout my experience in high school where I took on leadership positions, like I did get some critique for it from like other people in the school saying like, well, maybe in men in positions of power were kind of same as me. They didn't really get as much criticism. While for me, people would kind of say things like, oh, she's so controlling, she's so bossy, and I didn't really like that. Mm-hmm. And so when I first heard of Young Women in Business, I really resonated with their message. And I wanted that strong collection of females to support me and that I could also support and kind of have that network to kind of grow my future skills and kind of work with other women towards reaching gender parity and trying mm-hmm. to achieve equality in mm-hmm. Kind of a workplace or just daily life.
Yeah, and following up on what I mentioned before about economic empowerment for women, I think that within the field of business, women face so many different barriers than men do. Like, I can see, especially in one of my entrepreneurship classes right now, there's only 3 girls and the entire rest of the class is men. So it's really important to teach girls to be able to do simple things like negotiate their salary or to be more assertive in the workplace. And by helping other women have the resources to build those skills is mm-hmm. so important to me, because I think that women have so much to offer. And the thing is, they can't offer that if we don't provide them with the skills to do so. And this also applies to women in other faculties too. Like, we're really trying to push that we're open to all faculties, because no matter where you're working, if you're mm-hmm. a woman in science or engineering or in arts, there's still a business aspect to it. And we really hope to help women in every faculty build those skills.
Great. So we're going to go on a little music break, and then we will be back with more from all of you. Stay tuned, and I'm going to be playing, this is a very old song, I'm going to be playing At Last by Etta James. Enjoy, guys.
Over, and life is was wrapped up in clover. The night I looked at you, I found a dream that I could speak to, a dream that I can call my own. I found a thrill to press my cheek to, a thrill that I
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, and you're currently tuned into Intersections. So just before we heard Etta James's At Last, which Carol has already informed me is not her favorite song, we were talking to Simrit and Kate from UBC's Young Women in Business. Guys, thank you so much for telling us about the event that's going to take place when?
This Friday at 6:30.
Awesome, and it's going to take place at the Vancouver Art Gallery. So for those of you who are interested, please do attend the event. And for those who want to get involved in your organization, how where can they find you?
So you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. And we also actually have an office in the Student Union Building on the fourth floor. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get involved, we actually have hiring coming up for our VPs before March 14th. And you can find the hiring details and information on our Facebook page. And also we accept new members in September. So you can become a general member, or you can also apply to be a coordinator within our organization.
Awesome. Simrit, Kate, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So CITR is having its annual fun drive, and what that means is, okay, Danielle and Carol are currently trying to situate themselves in the room, if that's the reason for all that commotion. So, yeah, like I was saying, the content that we produce here in the Gender Empowerment Collective is only possible because of, you know, help supportive donors who are willing to give to community radio stations such as ourselves, which frankly are a little poorly funded.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, do you guys have any idea what it's like to share mics with guests? I mean,
okay, it's not even that bad.
I mean, it's not that bad, but I mean, it would be better if we had more mics, right? So donate for mics, guys.
And not just mics. I mean, the content we create at the Gender Empowerment Collective is something that I personally haven't seen a lot in mainstream media. We did a panel last year that Carol and Danielle were also a part of, and we had Shazia, who was a poet, come on. And we had a very unfiltered, open, and bold conversation about race and white fragility and allyship and decolonization that I think is usually presented in a really politically correct way. And the only reason we were able to have that kind of conversation and to have the voices that we do have on the show being represented is because of the funding that CITR gets and that the show gets. So if you guys can even donate $5, honestly, you would be really doing a lot for the station, which, like I said, just to reiterate, is very poorly funded and is only still surviving because of the hardworking students and all the love that this community propagates. I don't know what is the right word.
I think that was really well put. Yeah.
So please donate. online.
I think the bottom line is that, guys, just please donate. Please, we need the donations.
Please give us as much money as you possibly can, or even $5 online at citr.ca/donate, or you can call in at 604-822-8648. That's 604-822-8648. The benefit of donating, of calling in to donate versus online, is that you can win prizes from our show. If you donate
$2, you get to ask any question from any member of our team. So we're a really diverse team, people from different cultural backgrounds. So anything you're curious about of our countries, of our cultures, mm-hmm. feel free to shoot us a question, mm-hmm. and we'll get back to you.
And it can be as like non-PC as possible, so we can have like an open conversation. So yeah, you can do that. If you donate $5, we're going to play three songs of your choice on air. And if you donate $15, you can actually come into our show as a guest and chat with us. And if you donate $35, you can go on a date with one of our collective members. So please consider calling us at 604-822-8648 and donating money to this awesome community radio station.
That sounds good. Yeah.
So apart from the CITR Fun Drive, what's been up in the news recently, guys?
Well, so something really interesting that I came across the other day. So I play a lot of video games, and this new video game that I've been playing, Apex Legends, for all the gamers out there, probably know about this title. And so they recently revealed that two of their characters, one of whom, their names are Gibraltar and Bloodhound, they gave them...
Gibraltar?
Yeah, Gibraltar and okay. Bloodhound. So those are the two names of the characters. And so mm-hmm. Gibraltar identifies as gay, and Bloodhound does not identify on a binary gender spectrum. So yeah, it's kind of like that.
That is very interesting.
And so, yeah, I think it's just, like, interesting on how... we see LGBTQ representation within video games. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never seen that before. I mean, most of the characters, they do have personality, but like sexual orientation or something isn't something that I've seen a lot in video mm-hmm. games. And so I'm interested to
really
know what you guys think about that. I mean, I don't know how much you guys are into video games, but like, what do you think of? Do you think it's necessary, or do you think it has some value to it, or do you feel like, you know what, I think probably just like for marketing or whatever?
So I've played exactly maybe 4 video games in my entire life.
You have to tell us what video games they were, though.
Okay, so like maybe 10 years ago, I first played Need for Speed on my brother's PlayStation. And then recently, I played the Mortal Kombat. And then I played this other car racing game. Oh, and Halo. Is that it? Halo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I played
that was
Halo.
A classic, yeah.
And then one other game that involved fighting and killing and zombies. I can't remember what name, what the name of that game was. That's really interesting, a representation. And I think the right response would be to immediately say that's great. But like when I first heard that, to me, that just seems a little, I don't know, it's... Like, is that really necessary? Because it's a video game. I never was able to identify in any of the characters. Like, even if it was Mortal Kombat, you can't identify. They're all, like, wild, interesting, crazy mm-hmm. characters. And I liked the fact that I was able to identify with someone who was not me. To me, that was the whole point of playing a video game, right?
Oh, so
playing characters that are obviously way cooler and stronger and more athletic than you are. Yeah, and that to me is the whole point of a video game. So I don't know. My first reaction is just like, that seems so unnecessary. It's like bringing politics into like the video game world, or like identity politics rather.
Carol has something to say.
Okay, well, I mean, I agree with what you said about having to kind of have this fantasy world of video games and becoming a character that you personally are not. But I think if I don't have. I'm not very literate with video games, but if we compare it to, say, TV shows or movies, you know, for a long time, the discourse around that has been, well, why is representation really that important? Like, that TVs and movies are fiction. They're things that we can kind of be consumed in and not really think about a reality of. So in that way, I think with video games, like, so many people play them. And they kind of internalize it, whether they're aware of it or not. Mm-hmm. So I feel like mm-hmm. with, you know, let's say young boys mm-hmm. Who are playing these violent video games like Halo or Fortnite or whatever it is, they may not actively be thinking about who they are identifying as in terms of like the characters in these video games, but they're still choosing like, I don't see myself, like I as a person of color don't see myself in these video games. Like they may not be thinking about that, but it's still kind of contributing to how they see the world and how they understand their place in society. So I think identity politics and the fact that they've created these characters who are not part of the heteronormative narrative is super important. But that's just me being political, so.
Yeah, no, I think I kind of resonate with that as well. Apart from that, I mean, if you put it like really simple, it just adds more personality to a character, right? I mean, it just makes them more relatable to for people of that community. And like, I mean, we don't have any, I don't think, but it would be interesting to see how a person of that community feels about that decision to include.
Because then it's, I mean, I haven't seen these characters, these like the gay and you said non-binary?
Is that? Yeah.
I haven't seen what they're, how they're kind of sketched out, but I'm sure they could, like,
Oh, I mean, they both look really cool, though.
I mean,
Bloodhound is like, he has this big mask and he has a, I don't know, German accent or something.
Wait, so, right. That's it. Yeah, I don't. I just wonder, like, knowing that they're non-binary, how that affects the game playing experience.
I think to me personally, it just gives more personality to the character and just solidifies the identity even more.
Yeah.
And I think like whichever way you look at it, it's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah. See, I'm biased in the sense that I don't play a lot of video games, and I don't know, like, that internalization of the gaming experience that Carol was kind of referring to earlier. I don't really know what that is because I haven't played enough to really to kind of experience that level of commitment to playing your Xbox. So yeah, I mean, having said that, to me it just seems like it seems irrelevant. I'm not saying representation isn't important. Like I literally talk about representation for a living or a small portion of my living anyway. I do think representation is important, but I just don't know if it's like relevant that someone is non-binary as they're like killing a wild boar or like whatever game you're playing. I don't know. It doesn't feel relevant. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I think that's just part of the whole debate, right? I mean, there's a lot of people who think that, and like,
yeah. But again, then again, if they want to go ahead creating these characters, like go for it.
Yeah.
Like I don't actually like I'm supportive of that, and also I don't care enough about video games to care about identity politics in video games.
So because I don't really know this game at all, really.
What are they doing in the game?
So it's like a battle royale thing, like kind of like Fortnite. So you just like parachute in an arena and you're like in squads of threes. And so and so just basically shooting other people and just like grabbing whatever.
Yeah, so why does your identity, like, why does it matter when you're just killing people? It doesn't, I don't know.
Okay, well, let me switch that to you. Why does it matter, I guess, that we have a woman of color in violent movies being the protagonist who is killing criminals, let's say. Like, if that's the narrative in the movie.
So like
why
a powerful woman of character?
Yeah, why are strong female leads important if they're just people? Why do we have to have them as being like women of color?
Right. Well, here's the thing though, like when you're talking about politics or your movies or movies, I do think that they're much more, they have a bigger impact on society because they're so widespread. They're like everywhere. Like there's so movies, like media, it has a huge, it's society is just very saturated with it. And I don't know if video games saturate society in that sense as much.
If I may add, I think the video game industry has grown astronomically during the last couple of years. Like the user base has like increased so much. There's been so much money going on in the industry.
But I mean, but seeing your identity in politics or in movies, okay, why is that a bigger conversation than identity politics in video games? But identity politics in video games.
I think maybe because Hollywood has had a history when it comes to that particular issue. And as compared to like video games, I mean, they are kind of like a 21st century thing. So before that, you had like 8-bit games. And so, but now we've seen the industry evolve. You have these gaming narratives, you have these characters, and you have a rich environment where you can play in.
Right.
And so I think it is
an industry. There's an attempt to make it as close to reality as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it does add to it adds to the experience of playing a video game too. And I think it's a really powerful step in the right direction. I feel like
I haven't seen the evolution of video games in terms of characters, but I do know that the few times I have played with my brother, I never saw like the one person of color on that little gaming board where you can choose your character is just like one black person, and I would just be like that, or like an East Asian person. I would assume they were East Asian because they had a very stereotypical outfit on, like ninja, like kimonos, like you can just tell that's definitely an East Asian person. Mm-hmm. And I would always go for those characters because I never saw like an Indian person.
Right. Yeah,
it would I would just have to choose from another minority and just be able to, you know, relate to that. So. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they've made large strides in how they represent people of color in video games, because my brother plays video games a lot, and I don't see a lot of. We actually had this conversation the other day. I can't remember what video game he was playing, but it was some kind of a special ops kind of thing, and there was this one vaguely brown character who could have pretty much, because brown is it's a broad color. He could have been from pretty much anywhere in the world. He could have just been a white person with a very deep tan. But I remember my brother saying, oh, like, he looks vaguely brown. I'm going to choose him as a character. So I don't know if that was just, like, a single game. But, I mean, Danielle, you play more video games. I mean, how many strides have they made in representing people of color in a more accurate way? I think it's great that they're representing people of different sexualities and gender in a more accurate way. But what about people of color?
Well, I think, so some games have an option where you have an option to like make your own character, so you can choose their skin color or like what they look like, and so there's a deep customization to it. But like other games where you have to play as a pre-designed character, or like you have to play a story, I feel like sometimes games do struggle with portraying people of color in like games, because like most games will normally have like white characters or like white sub characters as well, and like they'll have supporting characters as like people of color, but mostly like all the main characters that you see in like all the big games are mostly going to be like predominantly like white or like Caucasian.
Yeah.
And so that is something, but
this may be a very, very unpopular opinion, but I do feel like it's very important for us as a society to make sure that when we're trying to uplift people from different minorities or different oppressed, like systemically or systemically and historically oppressed communities, it's important that we uplift them together, because sometimes I do feel like certain parts of the population that are considered minorities or that are considered oppressed tend to be lifted up faster than other parts than other minority communities, and to me that's not the best thing. And you guys may disagree with what I'm about to say next, but for example, on Netflix, I'm not going to say something. Carol just had like, oh my God, what the hell is she going to say? No, but on Netflix, for instance, like because I've been on Netflix for like a couple of years now, I'm ashamed to admit, but I remember in the beginning when you kind of like go, like when you log into Netflix and you see like the homepage, it was just like every movie, every TV show that they were advertising to me based on whatever algorithm was just like, it was just like white people. And then over the past few years, I've seen more like LGBTQ2+ shows and TV shows being kind of advertised. But I still don't see an equal number of like movies or TV shows where you have like brown characters. I see a lot of maybe black people in certain movies, but I don't see a lot of like brown characters. You just have that one tab that's like international movies, and then you go there and then you find like one Bollywood movie. But so I just feel like it's important to kind of have that together. So going back to what we were talking about earlier about video games, I mean, it's great that they have this. So they have like a non-binary person and a gay person, but it would be nice to see people of color also being kind of characterized in a more accurate and like realistic way.
Yeah, it would be nice.
So just in tandem is what I'm saying.
How long have you been playing video games, Danielle?
Oh, I don't even know, man.
He was born playing video games, Carol.
So my first video game that I played was probably like, I don't know, like the Mario Sonic kind of like era. And so I've been playing since then. Mm-hmm. And I took a break from it. I mean, I was forced to take a break when I was in boarding school, so no video games there. But even then I tried. So I've pretty much played the PlayStation 2 era, the 3, the 4, and then right now I'm playing on PC.
So how do you think playing video games has, I guess, affected you and your understanding of the world? Or has it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever reflected on it in that way. But if I had to think about it...
That'd be an interesting thing to like think about after playing video games. It's like, how is this affecting my perception of the world?
Yeah, because mostly you just like hop on a console, just like grab a controller, just like on, shoot stuff. Off. And then after that, you're just like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to go to bed. But yeah, I...
That's an interesting question, though, because I think if I'm, tell me if I'm wrong. Am I? Is it my understanding that you're trying to get to the question of does he internalize that experience? That's where you're trying to go
to
right now.
So, like, I think perhaps this is also a continuing conversation, but one of the reasons that my parents did not let my brother play these violent video games was because they were afraid that he would become desensitized to the violence that happens in video games, like, such as you said, like shooting, and then you just go to bed, like, you know. And so there's been studies done that I can't really reference, but because I don't really know them, that stated that, like, a lot of, you know, young men who play really graphically violent video games are less empathetic to kind of, like, violent graphics just in general. Like, they just kind of become, like, normalized to these images.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, like, if you kind of agree with that kind of concept.
I mean, I don't know, man. I've played some pretty brutal video games where there's a lot of gore and blood. And even then, every time I see news about a person getting shot or something, like, or just hear about a bombing, I feel really sad about it. And so, for me personally, I don't think playing video games has desensitized me in any way to violence or whatever. I mean, I understand that that is a video game that I'm playing, and, like, these are graphics. And witnessing something like this in reality would be completely different than seeing it in a video game.
So there's, like, a disconnect for you that you're able to kind of understand. Like, this is fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, definitely I can identify, like, what is fantasy and, like, what is reality.
Mm. And I think, does this have to do with identity politics and representation to you? Like, that kind of, is there, like, a connect, or was that a totally different question?
A completely different question.
Okay,
but
yeah,
can
fair.
Go on
that's
that.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm happy that there's a disconnect between playing violent
video
games.
Honestly, I think a lot of people who play video games, if you're going to talk to them, they're going to probably give you the same answer that I have. Because even though there are researches that do claim to, oh, they're making our children, like less empathetic or whatever because there's these shootings going on. But, like,
to be honest, the news does that.
But those researches, like, have you ever played video games, guys? Or are you just, like, quantifying these experiences, like,
Right. Or, like, they're generalizing.
Yeah, like a research way. Like, go play video games. Like, play them for a month or two and then come back. And then maybe we'll have this conversation again. And maybe you'll know personally how it affects you instead of just, like, being, oh, we've done research and we did a group or whatever and we found this and blah, blah, blah.
So, okay. Yeah. So it's that time again in the hour where I have to remind you that it is CITR's annual fund drive, which means... This is a call out to all of you wonderful listeners out there. If you enjoy our content, if you enjoy what the Gender Empowerment Collective creates, the kind of voices we represent and support on the show, please do consider supporting us in any way you can. You can either donate online at citr.ca/donate, or you can call us at 604-822-8648. That's 604-822-8648. And if you call us versus donating online, you can win a bunch of prizes. If you donate $2, you can ask our collective any question of your choice about, well, we have a very diverse collective. We have people from different countries. So you can ask us any one question about our culture or the politics of our country, anything at all. It doesn't have to be PC, i.e. politically correct. If you donate $5, we'll play a song of your choice on air. $15, you can come onto our show as a guest. And if you donate $35, you can go on a date with one of our collective members. So please do consider donating. And before we continue this conversation, let's take a short break. Stay tuned. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM. Be back in a jiff. Where should I go, daddy? What should I say? Where should I go? Is it okay with CITR and Timber Concerts present Cherry Glazer, on tour to support their upcoming new release, Stuffed and Ready. See them live Friday, March 8th at the Rickshaw Theater with special guests Pale Hound. Tickets are available online and at Red Cat Main Street, Red Cat Hastings, and Zulu Records.
Is it okay to... Celebrate outdoor adventure, the environment, mountain culture, and sports at the Vancouver International Mountain Film Festival. On from February 22nd to March 3rd at 7 venues around Vancouver. The festival presents exciting mountain films from around the world and inspiring live multimedia presentations from over 30 leading adventurers and storytellers. UBC shows feature legendary climber Doug Robinson, BC ski adventurer Matt Gunn, and a North American premiere of the trail running film Lessons from the Edge. Get your tickets today at vinff.org.
Hey there, my name is Callum Ng, the Executive Director of BC Athlete Voice. We are an athlete-focused organization helping British Columbia's athletes become their best. How do we do that? Well, if you're a BC athlete, we can help you with pretty much everything related to leadership, advocacy, and education. For example, we can help you find funding, start a new athlete group, or develop better public speaking skills. It's all at bcathletevoice.ca. And don't forget to look for us on Twitter and Facebook by searching BC Athlete Voice. Check it out.
I was a prisoner.
I was a prisoner.
Cocaine addiction.
Cocaine took my dreams. It made me lie. Steal.
Cocaine took my will, my soul.
And all I wanted was more cocaine. Cocaine Anonymous gave me freedom and saved my life. If you got a problem with cocaine, pick up the phone. We're here to help.
Contact Cocaine Anonymous toll-free by calling 866-662-8300 or find them online at ca-bc.ca.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM, and you're currently tuned into Intersection, CITR's biweekly radio show about gender empowerment and feminism. So before the break, we were talking, me, Carol, and Danielle were talking about video games and whether representation is really relevant in video games. I don't know if we really reached a conclusion. I don't think we have to reach a conclusion. But just to kind of put it out there, if it wasn't already clear in what I said before the break, I do think representation is important, and I'm totally for it. I just, my initial reaction is to just think it's maybe irrelevant in the field. But like Danielle said, it's, I guess the user base is increasing and people are internalizing it a little bit more. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Cool. Great. Sounds good to me.
So, too. Carol, while we were, during the break, you said you had a question for me about International Women's Day.
Oh, yeah. So, as we all know, Women's Day is fastly approaching. So, Lakshmi, I just wanted to know what your opinion was on how you see yourself participating in Women's Day. Like, how do you kind of contribute to that kind of narrative that happens around, like, oh, women empowerment, and this is what it means to be a woman? Like, how do you...
How do I contribute to that narrative of being an empowered woman? I don't know. I don't know if I know what that question really means. Hmm. Like, what am I doing to support and empower women? Is that what you're asking me, Carol? Carol's just laughing right now, which is why she's not saying anything. Carol, stop laughing.
Well, like, for example, like, do you, you know, go to, like, galas like the girls that we talked about?
No, I don't.
Or do you write, like, articles, feature articles talking about it? Or, like, how do you kind of contribute to that general discourse?
I would like to think that I contribute by my mere existence.
Spicy.
I mean, you know, the work that I do here at CITR, yes. I mean, the work that myself and everyone in this room does at the Gender Empowerment Collective is exactly that. We make sure that the content we choose to create for every single show and the voices we have represented on every single show are women, or are women of color, or you know, women who are identify from the LGBTQ category. And we try to empower women and different genders in whichever way we can every single show. So I'd like to think that that's me playing my part in empowering women as a whole. I don't think it's made international strides yet. I think we're still pretty localized, and I'm still pretty localized in my effort to empower women. And even as a journalist, I mean, we're all journalists in this room. I always try to write stories, or budding journalists, I should say. I always try to write stories that are about women of color, because that's what I identify as, and that's what's important to me. And I do think they need to be represented more in positions of power and not always as victims or, oh, look, it's, look at their strange culture. Look at this weird thing that this community is doing. Yeah, so that's what I try to do. That's my bit.
What about you, Danielle?
Yeah. How are you a good ally, Danielle?
Well, I mean, I am supportive. And I mean,
where is your conviction, man?
I don't know, man. I mean, this question caught me off guard, though.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to ask this to Lakshmi. So what is my contribution to International Women's Day? I think just agreeing with Lakshmi and just like being on this show and just like talking about different issues about gender and identity.
Do you feel like you'd have a chance to talk about these issues if you weren't on the Gender Empowerment Collective?
I would probably not have a chance to talk to an audience if I weren't on this show and just like get a chance to meet all of the amazing guests that we have on the show and just like talk about these really important conversations that we do talk about. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I weren't on the show, I'd probably be talking about this with a bunch of friends.
Exactly.
Who probably wouldn't be interested in it that much. They'd probably be like, mm-hmm. dude, stop. Can we not politicize mm-hmm. a pre-drinking session or whatever?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You
right.
know? It'd be like, I just want to go and have fun. I don't want to talk about this stuff. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's my contribution.
And that's just another reason why you should donate to the Gender Empowerment
yes.
Collective here at CITR. We do great work. We empower marginalized voices. We support minority communities. And most of all, we create great content. So please do consider supporting us in any way that you can. You yeah. can either donate online at citr.ca/donate, or you can call us at 604-822-8648 to donate. Once again, that's 604-822-8648. And like I've already said twice in this past hour, if you call versus donate online, you can win prizes. If you donate $35, you can go on a date with one of our lovely collective members. Disclaimer, it's a friend date, and it's going to be a coffee date. and if you donate $15, you can be on our show as a guest and chat with the wonderful collective members that we have here in Genpo. If you donate $5, you can play a song of your choice on air. Sorry, three songs of your choice on air. And if you donate $2, you can ask us one question about we have a very diverse collective, as I've said earlier, and we're all from different countries and orientations. So you can ask us any one question about ourselves, about our culture, about our country, whatever you want. It can be totally unfiltered. So yes, please do consider donating. And on that note, shall we play a song?
Oh yes.
Okay. So this is one of my favorite songs. It's by A Tribe Called Red. Have both of you heard?
Nope.
Okay, well, it's a cool song. Okay, here we go, guys. It's Ally Nation by A Tribe Called Red. Stay tuned.
The Halusa Nation. The human beings. The people. See the spiritual in the natural. Through sense and feeling. Everything is related. All the things of earth and in the sky have spirit. Everything is sacred. Confronted by the alien nation, the subjects and the citizens see the material religions through trauma and numb. Nothing is related. All the things of the earth and in the sky have energy to be exploited. Even themselves, mining their spirits into souls sold, into nothing is sacred, not even their self. The Ally Nation, Alia Nation. Look at
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR at 101.9 FM. This is Intersections that you're currently tuned into. And the song that you just heard was A Lie Nation by the artist A Tribe Called Red. It's one of my favorite songs. Before, what were we talking about before the break? Right, empowering women. Speaking of empowering, I know we don't have a lot of time left before our show draws to an end, but I think it's really important that I just want to say the tension. So I'm Indian and Danielle is Pakistani. And for those of you who have been keeping up with the news, you should be aware of the tensions across the border between India and Pakistan. And I just feel like this is a good time to kind of just say that I send my prayers and my condolences to the soldiers on the border, across the border, that are losing their lives and fighting for what, I'm not sure. But I send my prayers and condolences anyway. We're not going to get into the whole India-Pakistan kind of border conflict that's taking place right now. That would require several hours of airtime. But what I am interested in is the westernized kind of perspective on that whole issue, specifically Trevor Noah's little bit on The Daily Show about the conflict. Danielle, for our listeners who are not aware about why exactly Trevor Noah was kind of, he was under fire for the comments he made on the conflict, can you just kind of give them a little rundown on what exactly happened?
Oh, yeah, of course. So Trevor Noah on his show, he was just talking about the India-Pakistan conflict, and he then goes on and he says that, I don't want there to be a conflict, something like that, but if there was a conflict, it would be the most entertaining war of all time. And then he started doing some Bollywood impressions.
And a like, really, really horrific Indian accent.
Yeah, and he did an Indian accent as well. I just think it was just bizarre of how he tried to make comedy out of a really tense situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, what were you even trying to do, man? You know, I gotta ask you this question, man. I mean, what were you trying to do? I mean, how are you?
Trevor Noah, if you're listening, this is an open call out to you. What the hell were you trying to do?
Can you please like address this? What were you trying to do? Are you trying to like ease tensions or like make it like comic or something? I mean, how would that like Bollywood references and pretending that people are gonna be dancing on like a like in battle? What?
That to me is like it's a twofold stereotype. Like first of all, to reduce an entire like diaspora to just the film industry or their love for musicals. By the way, when La La Land came out, people were like so over the moon, like, oh my God, this is revolutionary. It's like musical theater. It's like dancing. And it's like, we've been doing that for so many years.
Guys, have you ever heard of Bollywood? I mean, have you ever seen those choreographed dances?
No, but it's not cool when we do it, Danielle.
Yeah, no.
It's only cool when Ryan and Emma
Stone.
Yeah, when they do it.
Groundbreaking cinema. You know?
I mean, that was part of the argument, wasn't it? Like, oh, it's like so, like Bollywood, as you mentioned, has been doing it. Like La La Land is like very redundant and derivative. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But sorry, continue with what you guys were speaking about.
So I think it's like a twofold stereotype. A, you're reducing the entire diaspora to the music and their love for dancing. And B, like the people who died. Like, how is this funny to you, Trevor Noah?
It's pretty intense back there. Like, there's so much at stake. Where both countries are like nuclear powers and like really strong militaries, and like it is intense over there. And how can you joke about it? You know, it's just absurd to me. Like, if there would have if a conflict would erupt, mm-hmm. the loss of life would be in the thousands.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe even
maybe even more than that. And like, how could you like? It's just absurd that you want to joke about it on your show. I mean, yeah, fine. I mean, I get it. You're a comedian. You want to joke about, but like,
no. But I'm a little heartbroken that it's Trevor Noah. Like, I would, if it was any other comedian who made this joke, for some reason, I feel like it would have been. I would have been like, okay, whatever. I wouldn't have cared as much. But the fact that it's Trevor Noah, and the reason I like him so much is for his like woke brand of comedy. Like he's intelligent. I resonate with him. Precisely because he doesn't make cheap jokes. So to have him make this kind of performance on his show, it was totally off-putting. Like, who are you and what have you done with Trevor Noah?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he did come out and apologize for it, though.
Of course he will. When you're under fire, people... Yeah. It's everyone apologizes when they're called out. Like, you don't even know if it's authentic or not.
I think maybe just, like, thinking about it a little bit more before saying something like this, so that you're not put in an awkward spot and just like having to apologize in public.
The best part is it wasn't just like a single line. Like it was a whole little, he did a little bit with the Indian accent. Little dance move.
Yeah.
Like trying to pretend he was a Bollywood dancer.
He put on a show.
Yeah, it was a long segment. It wasn't like, oh, it was just like, oh, I just, that kind of slipped. It was just like a line that slipped. It was like a good 3 minutes or 4 minutes.
Probably a lot of thought went into it. Yeah. Like, you know.
Well, clearly not a lot of thought.
I mean, I don't know what his thought process was when he was like thinking about that, but I mean, just seeing like it seemed like it was rehearsed or something or whatever. Probably thought about, oh, this could be funny.
Yeah, I mean, Carol, you're obviously not Indian or Pakistani. I mean,
I thought I was. I'm kidding.
Okay. we will accept you into the hood, but you will be one of us. But did you hear about the conflict at all?
No, when did this happen exactly?
Well, it's kind of ongoing in a way, but I think it started about like 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah,
it really got intense.
It all started with the terrorist attack on the Indian military, and so kind of that was like the starting point, and then it kind of like escalated.
The
from
first thing
on.
Was like there was a terrorist attack on Indian military, and it killed 48 Indian soldiers, so that was kind of the starting point, and then just stuff hit the fan.
Yeah, it's just been escalating from there on, but there has been some de-escalation recently. So,
but in terms of like Trevor Noah's show, this happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, when was Trevor? When
I think I think the show was aired on like end of February, so I think 27th.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the exact date, but he definitely aired that bit when like tensions were still pretty like intense. Which is such a poor judgment call.
Yeah, that's like not a smart move to make. So, I mean...
But, I mean, you haven't really heard about the conflict, right? So, if you just saw Trevor Noah's show about the conflict, like, how would you perceive the situation? Would you be like, oh, it's not such a big deal? Or would, the magnitude and significance of what's taking place in South Asia, do you think it would have hit you the same way if you just kind of knew about it from Trevor Noah's little...
Oh, no. Bit? I mean, I think I would completely gloss over it and just be like, oh, another joke.
Yeah.
I don't really see how this matters politically. Yeah, I mean, I think he really undermines what's already happening. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, see, comedy is such a weird genre. And I wanted to ask you guys about that. Like, how, if we had to still continue, if Trevor, for example, still had to make reference to what's happening, how would you change what he said to inform the audience in a comedic way?
Okay, that's a good question. This is why I don't know. How would I change it to inform it?
Or is comedy the incorrect genre?
Yeah, I don't.
I think
when death is involved, and possible nuclear war is involved, I think comedy can't really do much to kind of ease tensions. If anything, I think it'll make it worse. And to be honest, I mean, if this was something that happened with the States, I don't think people would be making a joke about it. Then it would be very serious. I just think it's an interesting power dynamic. Like, why are things more important and more valid and more like intense when it happens on the other side of the world versus when it happens in, you know, Asia?
I think comedy definitely has some value, but I think in situations like this, you can't go without like offending a particular group. So, like, I don't see any way that Trevor Noah could have done this without offending a certain group. I mean, I don't think you could do it in a tasteful way in a situation like this, especially considering the two countries involved and all the history that they have. So, I think while comedy does have its value, I think in some situations you're just better off, like, distancing yourself from it and not making comedic content out of it. That's just how I feel.
Yeah, this was in one of those situations.
But this isn't like in all situations. Like, this is a really particular situation where like tensions are at all time high. So I think the timing is also like really crucial when it comes to Trevor Noah. So maybe if we would have done this at a time of de-escalation when things would be like settling down or something, that would probably not offend a lot of people. Like, but when tensions are at all time high, it's like peak tension time and you're cracking jokes like that. I think it's just, I think there's no tasteful way to do it at that particular time.
Yeah, I mean, you can make jokes about like politicians or like about policies. That's okay. But when two countries are about to go to war and like they're literally just being held back by, I don't know, faith. that's not the best time to be like, oh, haha, like it's gonna be such a funny dance war.
Like, so if he had kind of steered his comedic satire towards the, I guess, politicians of each country, would that have been a better way of going about it?
I think. Okay, here's the thing. I think people get upset at anything. But I think if you talked about the politicians of each country in a kind of knowledgeable, informed way, even if people might have got upset, it wouldn't have been kind of like tragic or like, you know, because it's, you're not talking about death, you're just talking about policies and politicians, and it's always easy to make fun of politicians regardless of where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would have personally been a little bit okay with that.
Yeah, I think that would be a nice way to do it, just like making fun of politics or like the higher leadership of both countries and just like talk about like what their thought process is or whatever, just like make something up. Mm-hmm. But I think just like talking about soldiers on ground and,
right,
and just like making these shooting gestures of how they'd be shooting guns. I think that's just, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of offensive. That's just what I feel. Yeah.
Cool.
We have 3 minutes left until we have to draw to the end of the show. Is there any final remarks that you guys want to make? We've talked about a lot of different things today, so there's no way to really bring everything to a close, but
I mean, Danielle, do you want to go on a friend date with someone, some of our listeners? Is that something that tickles your fancy?
Whoa.
Say yes.
I would be open to that, but I'm not sure who would like choose me to go.
Why
on.
Not?
Danielle is great. He
very intellectual.
Yeah, an intellectual, right. Kind.
Super woke.
Super woke,
super
yes.
Woke.
He's a natural at radio.
And he has a great beard, for those of you who can't see.
Oh, I have a great, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, before the show turns a little bit weird, I feel like things always turn weird after we talk about beards.
What do you mean things always turn weird every time we talk about beards?
I'm not going to attempt to explain that on live radio, okay? We're trying to get people to donate to us, Danielle.
So what number can they call if they want to donate?
That's an excellent question, Carol. They can call us at 604-822-8648. And if they call us, they can win a date with the lovely and very kind and intelligent Danielle Tariq.
Wait, why am I the only one?
Or they can also donate like online. They can also donate online at citr.ca/donate. All right, guys. That's really it for today. Well, we have 2 more minutes. Carol, give me another reason why people should call in to donate $35 so they can go on a coffee date or a dinner date with the lovely Danielle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, like $2 will get you one question, you know, but $35, you can spend hours asking Danielle some of the most personal, perhaps even personally invasive questions that you really want to know. You know, Danielle's a mysterious man. Oh. So $35 will get you a lot, I'm just saying.
Oh, so. Yeah. Ask me anything, yeah. I'm really open to questions.
Danielle is an open book for those who don't know.
I think if people just ask me questions, I'm more than open in answering them.
This is true.
Yeah, any kind of question that you have, just shoot.
For sure. And hey, even if you guys, whoever ends up going on a date with Danielle, you may end up being friends if not.
Just to put it out there, I'm an awesome friend, okay?
He's a really good friend.
I consider myself a really good friend.
Except his taste in beer. He has terrible taste in beer. But apart from that, Danielle is a great guy.
What do you mean I have terrible taste
you
in beer?
You drink Guinness,
really not
Danielle.
Oh, dude, how is Guinness bad? Do you think Guinness is
no,
bad?
Oh, no, I love Guinness.
Yeah, you're
see,
outnumbered,
if you love
Lakshmi.
Guinness, let's go on a date.
Guinness tastes like dirt. That's all I have to say about that.
All beer tastes like dirt.
Again, Guinness tastes like dirt. Okay, so, well, thank you guys for listening in to Intersection, CITR's biweekly radio podcast about gender empowerment, patriarchy, beer, apparently, and many other awesome things. Please consider donating to citrs.ca/donate, and we will catch you in 2 weeks. Until then, this is Lakshmi.
Keep it spicy. It's Carol.
And this is Danielle.
Danielle couldn't think of a cool tagline on the spot.
Yeah, no, I don't have a cool tagline.
Okay, guys, be kind to one another. Have a great evening. This is Lakshmi. Bye. Oh, hey, Mom. Okay, bye.
Are you looking for a volunteer?